Thank you, Bruno. So I'm going to give this talk on behalf of my visiting scientist, Dr. Condori, who was not able to make it today, but I know his project pretty intimately. And this is really a fun project for me because it's a little bit different than what I usually do. And we've been working closely with a breeder, Dr. Kim Lewers in Beltsville, Maryland, and looking at trying to correlate microclimatic factors in strawberry production systems with yield. And so what we're going to talk about, what you're going to hear about today, is more exploratory, and then next year either I or Bruno will come back and give you the final conclusions here. Okay, so first I want to give some background on why we're doing the project. And in the U.S. eastern region, the majority of strawberry year-round is coming from two states in the U.S., and to a lesser extent, there's also some international availability. So the issue with that, of course, is if there is a bad weather year or something, or fuel prices spike, then you're really vulnerable in that market. So there's a lot of interest now in these local market sources. The only varieties that traditionally, or at least within the last few years, grow well are June-bearing varieties, and these are about producing a harvest once in a year between 3 to 5 weeks. So it's not sufficient to support a year-round market. So Dr. Lewers has been looking at these repeat fruiting varieties that have taken over the strawberry industry over the last decade. And it really kind of put mid-Atlantic production out of business, so to speak, and all the production went to California and to Florida. And the reason was because the conditions in Maryland or mid-Atlantic states were too hot to keep producing these repeat fruiting varieties throughout multiple months. If conditions are ideal, you can get these varieties to keep fruiting on a weekly basis for almost 2 years. Okay, so if you want to compete with that market, you have to be able to produce those berries locally. So what Kim found is that by using raised bed production with white on black mulch, okay, you can see the picture here, that she actually was able to extend the growing season and get really, really good yields that were comparable with what's being produced in California and Florida. So this is kind of the first part. So she was really excited about this. And then she found, and she looked at some other countries and how they're producing their berries, and if you add a low plastic tunnel on top of that raised bed, you get even more benefits. And she was really shocked to see, because her main focus as a breeder was initially to extend the growing season so she can test some of these new genetics that she was breeding. And then she found that, wow, not only is she increasing the growing season, she's got higher yields. And they're significantly higher, and I'll show you that. She also found reduced disease incidence, and this is significant. Reduced water use for frost protection, which again is a significant cost for growers, and it also increased weed suppression, which again is another significant cost for growers and also allows you to extend production into the following year. So she was able to identify these things and wasn't really quite sure why they're happening, and so that's where our collaboration was born. And so essentially, I'm an engineer by training, and so she wanted to see if we could try to understand what the microclimatic differences were in production between the open beds and then the covered beds. Okay, and you can see this is really a much more beautiful picture where you can really see kind of head on the differences in the treatments. Okay. So that was our main objective. The second part is we want to understand what the differences were, but then see if we can develop a relationship between the yield of these different repeat fruiting varieties and the microclimate. And then the last step is, which we haven't gotten to at this point, we'll be taking that information and ultimately making it more useful for growers because they have some moderate control over how they can manipulate temperature to a certain extent. And so this is a really potentially impactful research. I mean, we're talking about actually restoring mid-Atlantic berry production to a much larger extent. So it's pretty exciting to get involved with this. And so just real quick, materials and methods. These are roughly a list of the sensors that we bought and a lot of these we developed in-house. The standard information that you might want to measure, this is at canopy height and about a meter height, air temperature, relative humidity, solar radiation, wind speed, rainfall. We then developed these temperature stakes, and you might be able to see that here. They're basically 60-centimeter length tubes. The top 30 centimeters is above the bed, the bottom 30 is below the bed. And we set up thermocouples so that you can measure canopy temperature, mid-canopy temperature, crown temperature, minus 5 centimeters, which is really the irrigation depth, but it's also what Kim tells me is what the growers consider to be the bed temperature. And then also the rooting depth at 15 centimeters. And then we also measure leaf wetness, canopy leaf thermometry, and soil moisture. So we're not going to talk about all these in this lecture, but this just gives you a sense of how comprehensive we try to instrument everything. And this is kind of more of our materials and methods. So we used, and don't worry about that picture, that's just showing us our schematic of how we were setting things up. It was an engineer communicating with the breeder, so it took some time to get our lines together. So we have two different production sites in Beltsville. Each site lasts for 2 years. There were just two different plantings. One was 2012. I called it Site 1, and it lasted from April 2012 to July 2013. And then the second site was an adjacent field, and that started in 2013 and went to 2014. And at each site, we use the same five repeat fruiting cultivars. So you have a genetic and a bed treatment experiment. So then the type of data, we talked about the microclimate. This was collected at 15-minute intervals throughout the entire about year and a half of production. And then Kim was able to collect all the yield data. During the peak summer, this would be twice a week for all five varieties through all the replications and all the beds. So it's pretty labor-intensive. So I had the easy job, at least up to this point. Now I'm swimming in data. So I hope you can see this where you are. This is the first year. So each row is a different site. This is site one. This is site two. This is the first year of planting of those beds. Okay. These are the five different repeat fruiting varieties. So you can see they're the same. And this is the plots are from May through, I can't read it, May through November. Okay, in each graph, the dark line is the tunnel production, and the dashed line is the open bed production. And you can kind of see the differences better with Portola. Okay, but you can clearly see on most of these harvest dates, and by the way, this is yield per plant. Okay, this isn't cumulative, this is just yield per plant. On most days, you can see there's a pretty big difference, particularly as you go early spring into the late fall. And so just to kind of summarize this, the individual harvested yields were generally higher with tunnel versus the uncovered or just the open bed production. And we do see a part of this is due to apparent growing season extension because of the properties of the cover increasing temperatures. But there's some other factors as well. And we just finished getting a paper into review on the yield stuff, and then we're working on the climate information. But I just wanted to point out, Kim went ahead and averaged all the total kilograms per plant across both sites, across all varieties. And in fact, if you look at that, it's pretty tremendous the difference. This is about 1.5 kilograms per plant tunnel production, or cover tunnel production, 0.82 open bed production. So it's almost 75% higher. Okay, and then you can see the same thing with marketable yield and non-rotted yield. And so it's a pretty tremendous difference. So it's really exciting. We also did some plots that I worked on with Bruno looking at average berry number, and the similar relationships hold up. And I think the berry number, there might be more actually physiological meaning to that, and that's one of the things we're investigating. Okay, so then what we did, we began averaging these conditions. And there's a lot of information on the slide, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but basically over the year and a half that we were running each site, I just averaged daily values. Okay, so this was the open bed production, this was covered, or the tunnel bed production. This is air temperature, crown temperature, soil temperature. And for site one, you can see over the course of that year and a half, there's at least about 0.8 degrees Celsius daily higher temperature. And that is kind of what we intuit from having plastic over the tunnel. What was kind of interesting is that PAR is about 9% lower, and it's actually greater during different periods of the year. Okay, and despite that, the yields are still higher, and there's some reasons for that also. Site two, the differences weren't as dramatic, especially at the crown level, but they were still significant. And unfortunately, our PAR sensor, for lack of a better word, cropped out that year. So I don't have that data, but there's ways of estimating, so we'll look at that. There wasn't too much difference in relative humidity and moisture. And we did a multilinear regression looking at all these different factors with yield. And we found that the temperatures and the soil radiation, at least for that site one, were the most significant. So then, I'll show you one more thing, because I think the picture is more intuitive than the table. So I split up the temperature comparison by different seasons. So this was early spring, summer, late fall for site one. This is for site two. The red is the covered bed, and the blue is the open bed. And you can clearly see the difference in temperature. It's still higher in all three parts of the year for the cover tunnel production, but you clearly see early spring, late fall, the big differences. And this is transferring over to both sites. Okay, so we've kind of confirmed what we expected. Now the question is, what do we do with it? And, so this is where the exploratory stuff happens, so bear with me. So the first thing was, if you plot, this is just representative of two varieties. This is for site one. If you plot the cumulative yield now, so we keep summing up the yield over time for each variety versus month. So this now is 2012 into 2013 for site one. The red is the tunnel production. The blue is the open bed. Okay. And some of the varieties stopped producing in its second year that were in the open bed. Okay, so this still looks kind of messy. Well, we figured, okay, well, very simply, I think the lady had talked about it earlier today, is using growing degree days. And if you plot that, you get this really nice relationship. And they kind of, both graphs, both production, at least for that first year, kind of collapse onto each other. So I got really excited. I thought, oh, we're onto something. This is going to work great. And, you know, we fit our square to this and got the slope and thought, oh, this is like a Fallot-Cron. We can invert that and get some kind of Fallot-Cron idea where you can call this like a yield index with, you know, so many kilograms per plant per unit of thermal time. And so this looked really good. I got all excited. And then, you know, we want to plot for the second site. Okay, so that's, I'm going to skip that. And so this is what I did last from site one. This is the application to site two. So, you know, the wind just got taken out of my sails when I saw that. And that tells me that the thermal relationship works fine within the given year. And that has a certain value. But if we want to have a more robust relationship that we can tell growers what to do, clearly we're missing something. Okay, so we still have not lost hope, and this is more kind of hot off the press here. Okay, and those of you who had listened to my talk earlier this afternoon know that I like these contour plots, but I think this actually is pretty valuable. What Bruno found actually is there's really strong relationships, and this just happens to be a site one for now, take a step back. So instead of looking at cumulative yields, we talked a little bit more to Kim, our breeder, and we should have talked to her more, you know, even a couple months ago. We would have avoided some waste of time. And she said, you know, they really think that the influence of climate is going to be felt between flower initiation and fruit maturity. And so for each of these repeat fruiting varieties, you have like 50 to 70 harvests during the year and a half. And so we started looking at all these lagged combinations of environmental variables. And so in a nutshell, what Bruno found is if you take the first week after floral initiation and look at the average maximum bed temperature and the average daily PAR of that first week and relate that to yield, you get a pretty strong relationship. Okay. And so this is looking at just the open bed for one of the varieties, which Seascape happens to be, I guess, one of the most common repeat fruiting varieties. So it's sort of an indicator cultivar. The x-axis is your daily PAR for that week, so it's actually increasing. And then this is your weekly average maximum daily bed temperature. And what's interesting is, and I'm not sure if you can make this out, and these are average yields per plant at harvest, is if you go down to the left, so from right to left, you're decreasing your solar radiation, and then your yield actually is increasing. Okay, this is open bed production. And then this is, okay, well, this would make sense, right? Cooler temperatures, to a certain extent, you'd get higher yields. And so that's what we're seeing. What was a little surprising was the reduction in radiation, but it actually makes sense because I had done some measurements with leaf-level photosynthesis, and strawberry, at least the cultivars we're looking at, appear to saturate at about 800 micromoles, which is not quite a little bit more than a third of a peak solar radiation during the day. So they clearly get more radiation than they need, and it could be that they're allocating additional carbon to vegetative growth instead of to the berries in that case. But then we wanted to see if the relationship was going to hold into the covered bed, and it looks completely different. But then the reason is because PAR is much less. So if you actually took this axis, it would fit on this side of it. Okay, you can see this is running from 32 to 50, and here it's 14 to 30. So this relationship here is actually sticking over on this side. And really what I think needs to be done is to combine these two together, because if we have captured the correct relationships of yield and temperature and PAR, and that's all that's happening, then the same relationship should hold between both open and covered treatments. And so that's kind of where we are right now. We're going to explore, does this work for different varieties? Does it work for the second site? And I'm still kind of convinced that there are other correlations, like there may be threshold temperature within that period from floral initiation to harvest where there's some threshold, the temperature has to be below a certain amount. And it could be that that is even more closely correlated with yields. And so we're still looking at that. So let me summarize very briefly. So Kim has discovered that there really is potential for economic adoption of repeat fruiting strawberry varieties in the Middle East states. And this is really big. And this is using the white on black plastic or plastic mulch raised beds. Putting a tunnel over even increases the yield even more. And we've observed that the yields are most strongly correlated with air and crown temperature. Thermal time basis was okay, but really didn't describe what's happening from the different years and the different sites. So we're missing something. And that's where we are right now, is identifying these correlations with fruit yield maximum air temperature and solar radiation between these floral initiation and harvest periods, and that may explain the productivity responses. So I'll stop there. And